Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode here on Autism Stories. I'm your host, Doug Bletcher, the founder of Autism Personal Coach. Autistic people are the true experts of the autistic experience, and Autism Stories is where we interview autistic people to learn from their stories, experiences, and get their insights. If you would like to be notified about each week's episode of Autism Stories, we suggest you subscribe on your favorite podcast listening platform. We would also appreciate it if you could give us a positive rating and review, as it will help others to learn about Autism Stories. On today's episode, Bijan Aga returns to Autism Stories to discuss creating a strategy board game, successfully funding their comic book, and how self-publishing may be a viable route for other autistic creators. We hope you enjoy today's conversation. Bijan, welcome back to Autism Stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, last time you were here, you talked about creating the comic Cobra Olympus, and we're looking to get issue number one, Battle of the Blood Golem. I think I pronounced that right. Funded.
Yeah.
What was the result of that effort?
It was fantastic. We met and then exceeded our goal. We were able to get 100 comics printed out and sent to people all over the world. It was really great. We had stores in the United States and Canada stocking it as on their shelves as a regular comic. And we sent individual copies to fans out in Japan, Ireland, the UK, Australia. So there's issues of comic, there's issues of Cobra's comic all over the world now. And so we were able to use those funds to start the process of getting this, the first comic on Amazon. So we had to get the art resized, and we had to test out the glossy new paper. It's in a much bigger deluxe format, and it has extra pages that show the, what's it called, concept art. So we have concept art. So the fact that we were able to get the first comic funded so well meant that we were able to move those funds on forward, and we're working on all sorts of new projects. So not only are we working on the second edition of the comic, but it also resulted in us able to greenlight some new projects. We have a new project that is going to be a manga, an original manga, detective manga. And we have an artist in Asia that we're working with. So the fact that the first one got funded so well has started putting other things in motion. It's been absolutely fantastic.
That is very exciting to hear. And you mentioned Amazon. How can our listeners purchase issue number one of Cobra Olympus?
Yeah, so you just go to Amazon and you search for Battle of the Blood Golem. That's the one that'll bring up the comic. For some reason, when you search on Amazon, it searches pretty much only the product title. And so when I put in Cobra Olympus and Time Wars, those got put in as series titles. For example, if you search for Star Wars, you're going to find things with Star Wars in the name, but you might miss things like, let's say, Star Wars Rogue One. Rogue One is the name of the movie, so you might miss Star Wars. So it's the same thing with Time Wars here. Time Wars is the name of the brand, and then The Adventures of Cobra Olympus is the name of the ongoing comic. We're planning a six-issue miniseries, but the individual comic is called The Battle of the Blood Golem. So that's what you're going to look for in Amazon.
Now, I'm sure there's others listening that have ideas for comics that they would love to create. I'm wondering, going down the self-publishing route, what were you surprised to learn about this process?
Well, one thing is that the process of making a comic is very open-ended. There are lots of different methods you can use to translate an original concept into a finished product. So there's what's called the Marvel method, there's the DC method. Those are very common. Right now, the scripting method is the most common in the big industries. But we wanted to do something where the author had more control over the visual layout of the comic. So we chose what's called the Picar method. And it's named after author Harvey Picar, who was not an illustrator. And he did these like little slice of life comics, nothing science fiction or fantasy or anything like that. Just, you know, everyday interactions. And he would draw little stick figures, and he would label them, this one's John and this one's Mary, and he would put out the bubbles, the text bubbles, to show where they were supposed to go. And then he would hand it off to an artist, and then the artist would turn that into the finished product. We used a modified version of that process. I call it the modified PCAR method to make our comic. So that was the first big step, was finding a method that worked for us. And it's not going to be the same for everyone. Everyone's going to have their own method for taking a loose concept in a brain and translating it onto the page. I'd say it's probably easiest if you're both the author and the illustrator, because then you don't have to communicate that idea. But learning how to communicate that idea was the first big struggle. Actually getting it published is made much easier today than it was in the past. I remember reading stories about the original publication of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and they had to make it black and white specifically because their only option was Xeroxing. Xeroxing copies was their only option for it to make only 100 copies. And we were able to make 100 copies through a print-on-demand service called Comixology. It's offered by Grico Printing. They are able to make it looks just like a store-bought comic. And they have a minimum production order of 25. And it's just a few dollars a comic, depending on how many comics you order. And it's absolutely pristine quality, amazing paper, amazing inks. So, you know, the original Ninja Turtles, they put out those 100 copies. They were literally just printer paper, Xeroxed and stapled together. Whereas now, with the more advancements in computers and the fact that we can do things digitally, we were able to put out our first 100 copies looking just like any other comic out there on the shelf. So I'd say that now is the best time ever to get into independent printing of comics. There's never been a better opportunity because of the lower cost of production and the higher quality of the end result. And especially also with crowdfunding like Kickstarter. Again, when Peter Eastman and Laird, when they made the first Ninja Turtles comics, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, when they made the first Ninja Turtle comics, they had to do everything out of pocket, right? They didn't have the option of going to anyone for crowdsourcing or anything like that. You either worked with the big boys or you paid it right out of your pocket. And now with crowdsourcing, we can get the backing of fans all over the world. So our first printing, you know, there was no one in between us. It was just me having bought the art from the artist and the backers. And those are the only people involved. It was just one-on-one, basically. So it was a really amazing process. You know, it's the most punk way to tell a story right now. Because if you want to make a movie, you're going to need a big budget. You know, if you want to make animation, you know, that's not cheap. But if you make comics, it's just the cost of paper and ink, plus whatever you can draw. Your imagination is not limited. So, yeah, now is the time. And if you want to make a comic, right now is a great time to start.
Now, we were talking about issue number one of your comic is out now, but issue number two is in development. You have any spoilers for me?
I can tell you a few things. So it's going to be called Robot Rumble. And it's the first splash page and the cover are going to show our heroes going up against some pretty unusual looking robots. We had a lot of fun thinking up different ways to make robots. We didn't want them to be just one-to-one human analogies. We wanted them to have really bizarre contraptions and unusual body shapes. So the robots that act as the antagonists are really fun designs. We had a lot of fun dreaming them up. It's also going to involve a new hero named Etta Kitchell, and she is going to make friends with Cobra out of uniform, and then Cobra is going to enlist her help in defeating the robots. And there's going to be even more Canadian football references. There was a little little Canadian football poster in the first comic. In the second comic, we're going to actually make it a part of the story that the Canadian football is on TV. And there's also going to be a lesbian sorority, all lesbian sorority for the university that Cobra attends. And there's going to be lots of sports references. We dug deep because it's this set Seattle, like Seattle. So we dug deep with some old sports references, teams that haven't been around for like 100 years, and putting characters in their uniforms and putting the logos up in places. It's going to be a very Northwest sports themed Robot Rumble adventure.
From what I understand, you aren't stopping with comics. You have a new project in the works, which is a strategy board game. I'm wondering about the impact of strategy board games in your life. In what ways they might have had a positive impact on you?
Yeah, so one of the first strategy games that really had a big impact in me was Magic the Gathering. And I think it was had a lot to do with the fact that it was such a strong theme. I obviously grew up playing games like Monopoly and Trouble and Chutes and Ladders, Candyland, and those all had pretty limited theming. But the idea that I would be casting spells and summoning monsters, right, that was what really intrigued me. And what the game ended up being is one of the deepest games ever invented, especially just because of the card count. Magic the Gathering has so many cards that they've printed over the years that if you play expanded with every card ever printed, it's, you know, it's vastly more complicated than like chess, for example. And in chess is almost infinite in its complexity. That's a big thing to say. And what I really got into card and board games that had a strong theme and had really intricate gameplay. And that those are what where you could forge your own sort of strategy, forge your own path, and where there were multiple legitimate ways to play. Like there's, you know, like with Candyland or Trouble, it's mostly, okay, with Candyland, it's mostly all luck. With things like Trouble, Parcheesi, there's usually one or two correct ways to play, and, you know, the other options would just be wrong. So what really intrigued me were games where there was multiple possible correct options. One of the ones that really impacted me was relatively recent. Well, I mean, I guess it's, it's been almost 6 years, so I guess not that recent, but it was Star Wars the card game, and it was a living card game. So the difference between a living card game and a trading card game being that when you open a trading card game package, it's random. But with a living card game, each package said on it which cards were inside. With the living card game, it was a really fascinating game. The other interesting thing that it did was that cards came in groups. So if you wanted to put this one really cool card in your deck, you also necessarily had to put in these other not necessarily as cool cards. So it forced you to work with a less than optimized deck, which is a very interesting thing to do in a strategy game. It means you have to choose your weaknesses. I really loved that game. And one of the things I did is I had, because I'm autistic, I avoided a lot of games that involved reading people's faces. I was really averse to games like poker, where it's basically just 100% wall-to-wall reading faces. So what's really different is that there is a bluffing element in Star Wars the card game. And in Star Wars the card game, what happens is when you get into a battle, you discard cards from your hand, and each card has a series of icons on them. And the person with the most of those icons wins the battle. And so you can try to bluff out your opponent to waste their cards by putting in lots of lower icon cards, or you can take the more aggressive strategy and actually put in lots of big number cards, or just try and barely beat them by putting in a few big number cards. So there's lots of different ways to play. But it also involved bluffing. The thing that made a difference for me was context, because with poker, there's no context for why someone would or would not be bluffing because you don't know what cards they have. Whereas with Star Wars, the card game, you knew which unit they were using to attack you with. You knew which units you were using to block them with. You knew which of your goals they were trying to attack. So you had some context as to whether or not this was a very important battle for them to win. All of a sudden, this bluffing element was totally contextualized. Is this really the battle they're trying to win, or are they just trying to get me to waste cards? There was a lot more clues I could use other than just the person's face. And that's what I really wanted to bring to this new project. This new project is very bluffing oriented, but with the board and the fact that you're moving these pieces around, and the pieces, they can group up into fleets, you can have different positions, you can have different goals, means that when you are bluffing with my new strategy card game, Time Wars Stellar Assault, that there's actually context for why they would or would not be bluffing, and you can use more than just reading their face to try and win the game. It's called Time Wars because it also takes place in the same universe as the Cobra Olympus comics. It just takes place in the deep future, and it simulates starship combat. Although there are also demigod-like beings called X-Knights. So there are demigod-like beings called X-Knights who are empowered by technology. And then there are cruisers. and you try and use them to control different planets. At the beginning of the game, you're given a secret card with two planets on it, and you win the game when you control those two planets plus the middle planet. I wanted the rules to be pretty straightforward and simple. Movement is very straightforward. A piece moves a space. If it's on a gravity space, it moves two spaces. Combat is very straightforward. When two pieces engage in combat, you do the discarding of cards, and you play out the result based on the icons. But what's really changing from game to game is the strategy that each person brings. There's so many different options for how you can play it out, and that changes the context, and therefore when you get to the bluffing, it changes what you think they're really trying to accomplish. So I basically am trying to make a bluffing game for autistic people, that autistic people can play.
I wanted to ask you, you were talking about cards where you kind of had to choose your weaknesses, and I'm wondering, as autistic people, the focus is so often on the things that are challenging for us. And I'm wondering about dealing with cards that you have to kind of like look at your weaknesses or your so-called weaknesses, how that might translate to kind of like areas of your everyday life.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think it's one of those things where the more you participate in something, in any activity or hobby, the more you start to see metaphors between that and your real life.
Right.
Yeah. So, for example, engineers see a lot of their life problems as engineering problems. And so literature people will see their lives as stories that need resolutions. And so as a game person, I think of the structures that guide my life as rules that I have to follow, and that the way I navigate in between those structures is my strategy for the game. And yeah, life is a game that does not reward optimization. As much as you try and put all your time and energy into any one thing, you will be taking away that time and energy from all the other things in your life. So it's all about balance. And you have to just let something be not your strongest element at some point. I had to at some point realize that I was not getting very good at math, and that if I spent a lot of time practicing so much that I actually got as good at math as my peers, then I would have detracted from all the things that I could have gotten better at, like guitar or writing stories or making games. One thing that I had to concede early in my life was that, same thing for reading faces, right? There are ways to learn to get better at reading faces. I could devote myself to truly learning the artistry of understanding how people are feeling just based on the way they're expressing themselves. But then at a certain point, I'm taking away from other things that I'm already pretty good at that I really love. You know, we don't have an infinite amount of time, and time is our greatest resource. So we sort of have to pick and choose, what are we going to develop as our strengths, and what are we just going to allow to be our shortcomings, things we're not perfect at, right? And that's human. Because if we were to evaluate again, where if I were to focus on mathematics and reading faces, then I'd just be choosing the things that I love to then become my weaknesses. Then I wouldn't be as good at playing guitar or ukulele. I wouldn't be as good at writing stories or making games. So yeah, there's no way to min-max life, so to speak. You know, like role-playing game players will often try and do. There's just no way to do it. You have to pick and choose what you're going to invest your time and energy in, and what's worth not being the best at.
Now I'm wondering what's in store for Jamshed Studios in the future, as you're an artistic collective of LGBTQ+. People who enjoy creating stories, worlds, and characters that reflect not only your values, but also the human experience through every form of art. You know, we talked about comic books and strategy games. Are there other forms of art that you envision creating in maybe 2024 and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, the fact that we had got so much great funding from our Kickstarter enabled us to start rolling some snowballs down the hill, so to speak. The big one is going to be the board game, Time War Stellar Assault. That's coming out December 1st is the Kickstarter starting. If we could throw up a link in the description to the Kickstarter link, that would be great. If you go there now, it will allow you to sign up for email notifications. But remember to come back on December 1st and sign up. We have a very low goal this time. We're only trying to ship a few units. So anything extra will, again, just be put into more projects down the line. With this Kickstarter funds we have, we were able to greenlight the second issue of Cobra Olympus. If you sign up on our Patreon right now, patreon.com/jamsheedstudios, you can put a link up as well. If you are on our Patreon, we're getting new pages of the comic every month. So every month I'm putting out a newsletter and we're getting new pages of the comic. They're brilliant. They're beautiful. I'm so happy with them. Etta looks great. She's the new supporting character. What I'm really happy with is the colors, because it takes place in the day. Everything looks warmer and more friendly than the nighttime issue last time. The whole thing has a different vibe. It's very beautiful. We're also able to work on fan projects. So we're having a lot of fun working on a ROM hack of a Pokemon game into a Digimon game. And this is because we're getting our funding from outside our products. We're actually able to fund projects that are financial dead ends, that are just passion projects. We can't possibly make any money from this ROM hack, but we've worked with the community to add the monsters that people want. We're creating unique evolution strategies, and the whole game is basically going to be very, very different from the original Pokemon game, but it's going to be all Digimon. It's going to be a totally different game. It's going to have a new story with moral options and multiple ends, and we can only do that because of our Patreon. It's the only way we can manage to fund this project, because we're getting professional artists to create beautiful, beautiful sprites for the characters. We also have greenlit a manga. We are not ready to release a lot of information about it. The artist will be from Asia, and it will be produced in black and white with a full color cover. The only detail I can share so far is that it is a science fiction detective mystery. So that is going to be a lot of fun. We're currently working on the outline right now for what we hope will be issue one of a mini series. So yeah, and then every time someone joins our Patreon, it enables us to create more projects. And when we get more backing on our Kickstarters, that also enables us to greenlight more projects. So we have in the works a podcast. And the podcast is a real play podcast of a tabletop role-playing game that we're currently developing that also takes place in the Time Wars universe, same as the board game, same as Cobra Olympus. And in it, you take on the role of time travelers. Right now, we've got everything except it needs funding to be edited. So we've got it all filmed, we've got it all recorded, and it's our next goal on our Patreon is to get the funding to get it edited together into a series that we can actually watch. So those are our projects.
Now, I'm not too familiar with tabletop podcasts. Are there many of, like, is there many of those types of podcasts out there, or?
Yeah, I'd say the most famous is probably Dimension 20, but basically it's just a podcast where people sit down and they play a tabletop role-playing game. It's usually Dungeons and Dragons. It's pretty dominant in the industry. The more high-budget ones will include graphics. We're nowhere near that level, but they'll include like actual representations of the characters, sometimes even carrying out specific actions. But it is basically just a recording. It's just a podcast recording of people playing a tabletop role-playing game. And so in our case, it was a prototype of an adventure that we're planning on publishing with the tabletop role-playing game. The tabletop role-playing game is Time Wars Time Form. And we have a prototype of the adventure, which is called Heracles' Last Voyage. And the idea is that the people in the deep future, the 161st century, have determined that Heracles was a real person and that he died at some point during this journey between two islands. And you're being sent to sneak on board the vessel and discover exactly how and why he died. So it's a bit of a murder mystery that unfolds as you watch. And so we had some great people come on, and they had some great improv skills. We did a lot of fun adventuring, and it was really, really a lot of fun. And they did solve the mystery, so I can say that. They did end up figuring out how it happened. The show will resolve well. But yeah, well, now we just need a little more funding to make it real. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Well, Bijan, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thanks so much for returning to Autism Stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much to Bijan for the conversation. To learn more about Bijan and Jamshid Studios, please check out the link in the podcast description for this episode. Here at Autism Personal Coach, our clients are the experts, our coaches are the guides. The majority of supports for our autistics are not helpful. They try to fix us, not support us. That's why many are confused when we say our clients are the experts, experts of their lived experience. Our clients are the experts for what's worked for them and about the things they need and want in their lives. Our coaches first listen to our clients and then ask thoughtful questions, offer resources, and strategize with our clients so they can get what they need to thrive. Would you want a guide in your life to coach you to get you the things you desire? If so, then visit autismpersonalcoach.com for more information. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autism Stories. And if you did, if you could tell a friend, foe, or anyone you know about it so they could have the same enjoyable and educational experience as you when listening to Autism Stories, be very much appreciated. Till next time, I'm Doug Bletcher of Autism Personal Coach. Talk to you then.